much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in today. Hope you're having a great one. Well, here's my question for you today. What are the broken dreams in your life? What parts of your story do you just still feel disappointed about? You know, you're thinking, that didn't exactly turn out the way I thought it would. Have you just set it aside on the shelf, kind of given up hope that there's redemption for that part of your story? You know, the Bible talks about that hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. Well, I'm so excited for Sheridan Voisey to join me to share his hope-filled story about starting again after a dream has died. We're going to talk about his book, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. That's exactly what God does, and I just want so much for you to have revived hope today. I just think so often we live with a low level of misery that we don't necessarily have to. I know stories don't turn out exactly like we'd hoped. I think that's true for all of us, if not most of us. But God can redeem our story beyond our wildest dreams. And if we look up and engage our faith in those areas and say, Lord, you know, I'm laying this down. I'm surrendering my idea of how this should turn out. But I'm engaging my faith with you, asking you, bring beauty out of these ashes. Bring a redemption out of this story. This conversation, I believe, is for you today. Can't wait for you to hear what Sheridan has to say. Before we get him on, I have a couple quick announcements. If you are streaming, live streaming from anywhere around the world, I want to hear from you. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Just as we send out shouts to our different listeners in different markets, we want to identify you, and we want to get some books out to you. So your name will go in a drawing, and a few of you will get a few books from our Faith Radio shelf. We'd just love to know where you're listening from. Also, a special shout-out to those listening at 93.1 FM in Waterloo. I'm so glad to have you listening. I'd love to get you a new listener welcome packet. We can do that by having you go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Just request it. You'll get a packet with a best of CD. It's a nice sampling of our programming, and you can listen while you're driving in the car. I think it'll really encourage you. Also, just want you to know that our fall share is coming up right around the corner, and would love, love, love to have you just praying, asking God for fresh vision of what is possible when we all come together and get a vision for the lost, for the hurting, for the broken, and for those of us who walk with God but just need a word of encouragement as we stay the course in the battle. Would you pray? We are excited about what God is doing through Faith Radio, and we can't do it without you. Okay, so my guest today writes this. There's a life after a dream has died. The God of the crucifixion is also the God of the resurrection. While a fairy tale cannot be promised, as there are precious few fairy tales outside of Disney, the tragedy can make way for some joy. And while some scars will remain, even as Jesus carries the marks of his ordeal, healing and restoration can come. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Sheridan Voisey's a writer, international speaker, and broadcaster on faith and spirituality. His books include Resurrection Year and the award-winning Unseen Footprints, Encountering the Divine Along the Journey of Life. You can find him on the web at SheridanVoisey.com. Dear Sheridan, welcome back to the program.
So good to talk to you again, Susie. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
And I as well. Always appreciate that we get time with you. I know that you're a busy man, so thanks for that. So, Sheridan, we love to start our conversations talking scripture, and you chose 1 John 3, verses 1 and 2. Now, I have it in front of me if you just by happen you don't, but I love your accent and your voice, so I'd way rather hear it.
Yes, that strange accent where people listening to it, they say, is it South African? What is it? It's English-tinged Australian, just
perfect.
So you know. But I do have it in front of me. I mean, many of our friends will know 1 John chapter 3, verse 1 very well. How great is the love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. Now, I'd like to go to verse 2 as well, because it equally is important, and I think we kind of missed that one. The second verse says, dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be hasn't been made known yet, but we know that when he appears, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is. I think the two great questions of human existence are, who am I, and who am I becoming? And Susie, I just love it when, you know, God is so beautifully efficient in the scriptures where the two great questions of life are actually summed up in two verses of one particular chapter. There you have it. Who am I right now, no matter whether times are good or bad, or whether I've got no money in the bank account, or whether my dreams are broken, or, you know, whether I've lost my job, or whatever it might be about my identity, right now, if I'm a believer in Christ, I am a child of God, and that identity can never be taken away from me. Who am I becoming? I'm becoming like Christ, a Sheridan-shaped, Jesus-shaped Sheridan. Mm. You know, a new me who will be like him in character, but like me in personality. And then what we do between now and the time where we meet him face to face is we become more and more like him as we walk with him. So who am I? I'm a child of God. Who am I becoming? I'm becoming like Christ. And he's doing that work in me. And I'm just kind of wanting to try and participate as much as I can in helping that change, that personal development program happen in my own life.
Mm, wow, love it. And this is exactly, Sheridan, why we asked that question, because you just unpacked a passage in ways I'm sure many have not considered before. Thank you for that. Well, this book, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings, it's raw, it is beautiful, it is deep, it is profound. I'm so grateful to be able to talk with you about it today. Would you mind, as much as you're able, giving us some backstory, just the catalyst to writing this story in Resurrection Year? Give us a little backstory on your journey.
Yeah, well, it all begins in the year 2000 when Meryn, my wife, walks into the kitchen and she says, "Honey, I think it's time." And I, as a typical man, said, "Time for what?" And she said, "Time we started a family." And it was time. We'd been married for 5 years by that stage. We were in a stable position. You know, we'd been moving around cities before then, but now we were in a city and we didn't think we were going to move again. And so we were in a good place to then think about starting a family. And anybody who makes that decision, any couple listening, knows that from that point on, every 28 days, you're looking for signs of success, aren't you?
Mm.
And there can be some sense of disappointment that first month because that's quite common. There's an expectation, maybe this is the month, and then it's very common for couples to have at least 1, 2, maybe even 3 months where the expectation is met with disappointment. Well, for us, the pattern went expectation, disappointment, expectation, disappointment, expectation, disappointment, expectation, disappointment for 9 months. And then we went and got some tests done, and we found out that there was a problem on my side, and that without some sort of either divine miracle or technological assistance, our dreamt of child would be very difficult to have. And Susie, from that point on, really, there was 10 years of journeying through the wilderness, and you name it, we pretty much tried it as much as we believed was ethically okay to do as followers of Christ. We sought healing prayer numerous times. We tried all sorts of diets. I had all sorts of supplements because the problem was on my side, so we were trying various supplements. We wrestled with the ethics of doing in vitro fertilization for a couple of years trying to work out whether Christians should do that or not. In the end, decided on a particular way that we would do it, so we would make sure that no life was lost through the process as much as we could. We tried that in 2006, but that didn't work. We went through the Australian adoption system. We took eight, 9 months to be assessed through the system. We waited for the phone call to come to say, "We've got your child ready. Come and pick him or her up." For 2 years following that, the phone call never came. By that stage, Meryn wasn't in a very good place. We tried IVF, a whole heap of rounds of IVF after that. And to cut the whole long 10-year story short, by the end of that 10 years, December of 2010, we were then told the news that we'd been longing to hear. We were told by the IVF clinic that we were pregnant. And we had mothers squealing down the phone. We had, you know, fathers, jumping up and down with joy. You know, we had friends bursting out into tears when they heard the news. And then on Christmas Eve of 2010, we had another phone call from the IVF clinic, and the nurse said, "We're so sorry. It hasn't worked."
Mm.
And so from that point, Meryn, I remember we were up in Brisbane. We were living in Sydney at the time in Australia. We were up in Brisbane. It's about a day's drive. And we were getting ready for Christmas with our families, and Meryn put the phone down, walked into our room where we were staying, curled up in a fetal position, and that's where our 10-year dream of having a child ended that night.
Wow. Wow, Sheridan, I just, it's so unfathomable. And, you know, it's amazing, when, and this is just what's true, is when we have a longing in our heart, those who have what we want and maybe don't even realize what they have, they seem to pop up everywhere, like whack-a-mole. You know what I mean? Where you see people holding their belly going, oh, I'm pregnant again. Or, you know, a single woman hears a woman complain about picking up her husband's socks. It's like everywhere you turn, you see people who have what you want. And it's almost flippant for them. And I know that's not intentional, but it's just there. Did you happen to see that? Every which way you turned, people had children or were pregnant again and again?
Absolutely. You know, anybody listening to us now who is going through or knows a friend who is going through the journey of infertility knows what it's like to walk past a schoolyard or, you know, a fun park and to see all those children playing. And especially when we were going through our 20s, when we kind of started the journey and then we were going into our 30s, our friends left, right, and center were having children. And not just the first one, but the second one. We've got some friends that have got five children. You know, they were happening everywhere. And, of course, when you're in church, then you're surrounded by your wider family of faith, and they're all having children. Difficult times indeed. And, of course, you know, sometimes people aren't – either they don't know what to say when you're going through your journey, or maybe they're just not as considerate as they could be. Sometimes, you know, you'd have friends go on and on and on about the wonders of having children. And there were just times where that was just not the thing that we needed to hear. Yeah. And other times, of course, you know, we had wonderful friends that just knew exactly, you know, what to do. So it was a very, very difficult time. I think, Susie, probably one of the worst times was I remember we were sitting in the lounge room watching the news, and a story came on about a little baby that had been abandoned and had been found on a conveyor belt at a garbage dump. Wow. And I remember Maren just burst into tears, and she had to leave the room and go into our bedroom. You know, here we are doing everything we could to try and start a family, to have that baby, and somebody else has just simply passed one on and thrown it into the trash can. Those times were the most difficult.
I'm going to pause here now. Talking to Sheridan Voisey, radio broadcaster, author, man of God, talking about his book, Resurrection Year. I can't wait till you hear just how God just, he does bring beauty out of the ashes, and things don't turn out the way we expect. But the idea of Resurrection Year, that there is a turning of the tide. But we got to spend some time here talking about what to do when your dreams don't come to fruition, when God doesn't give you what you want. When we come back, we're going to talk about that internal spiritual process, how that this not yet, this answer from God impacted Sheridan and Maren's relationship with each other and with God. And maybe you have a different broken dream. We're going to get to that as well. Don't go away. More with Sheridan Voisey when we return. Song play, because maybe you're in a valley of the shadow, maybe you're in a season of not yet, or maybe the answer is no. You wanted something, God has shut that door and he's not opening it. How do you sort through that? What do you tell yourself about the heartbreak and the disappointment? I think one of the first things we tell ourselves is, I belong to him. He belongs to me, and he's a good father. Talking to Sheridan Voisey today about his book, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. If you just tuned in, I want you to go back and catch the whole podcast once the live show is over. And Sheridan tells this backstory of just them wanting to start a family 10 years later, still no baby, and the contrast of you doing everything medically that you can and with diet and everything else, and it's still not happening. And your dear wife, Maren, sitting in front of a TV, seeing that a baby had been abandoned in a trash heap, and here you guys are trying as Christian people to have this baby. How did this impact your relationship with each other, Sheridan? How did it impact your relationship with the Lord?
Two very good questions. I mean, the first one, our relationship with each other, there were times where we understand now why marriages can bust up over the whole area of infertility, because the pressures are so intense. And the pressures can be intense from a variety of different angles. Number one can be the fact that one partner may want a child more than the other. And so the other person may want to, you know, give up the journey much earlier than the other person, and then they kind of feel that they're dragged along. Secondly, though, just the sheer number of decisions that you have to make, the amount of times that we were sitting on that couch talking and praying and trying to arrive at some kind of decision. Do we do IVF or not? Do we do local adoption or international adoption? We actually started off looking at adopting a child from the Philippines, but then the program was looking, I think it's even closed down now between Australia and the Philippines. You know, it was looking very, very tight. Decision after decision after decision, it was a tough time. I think one of the things that was just so important, though, is that we had decided that our marriage was going to be the prime thing to maintain. And I remember one particular time where we were sitting talking to a IVF counselor, and we were sitting in this office, and the IVF counselor said to us, now you know that doing in vitro fertilization can be stressful on a marriage. And I actually thought at that stage she was talking about the drugs, because the drugs that a woman has to take in IVF basically stimulate all this egg production, and then afterwards kind of throw you into almost a pseudo menopause. I mean, it really does mess around with your body and with your emotions. And the IVF counselor said, well, I'm not actually just talking about that. I'm talking about the amount of decisions you're going to have to make. Do you do one round of IVF or two? Do you keep on going? Do you stop? And Meryn said, we've already decided that our marriage is more important than having a child. And, you know, Susie, at that point, the counselor literally just slumped in her chair. And she said, oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because just yesterday, a husband and wife sat in exactly the same chairs you're sitting in now. And the wife said in front of the husband to me, if this doesn't work, if IVF doesn't work and we don't have a child out of this, this marriage is through.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think that's been the key thing that we have continually said to couples that we've come across, and we've come across a lot now. Resurrection Year has opened up all sorts of conversations and doors with well-known people, unknown people, about their broken dreams, and it's the first thing that we say: your marriage is more important than having a child. If you lose your marriage as a result of pursuing a child, then you've lost two things, double whammy. Make that the most important priority. And it's just so key, just so key. Mm. The second question that you asked about how it affected our relationship with God, oh my goodness. There was two responses. Meryn turned against God, and I kind of turned against myself. So Meryn's relationship with God over that 10 years just got colder and colder and cooler and cooler, to the point where she wrote in her diary one night, God feels like a friend who no longer returns my phone calls. Mm. And you know what? She would say that even after we have moved on from that devastating phone call on Christmas Eve of 2010, and we've been able to build a new life and move on and see God redeem it, that it's still taken a few years for her to warm back up to God again and with God again. She's never, ever thrown in her faith, thrown it away. She's always believed that there is a God. She's always believed that he's good, even though she can't quite feel it. But just like the Jews, as they're going through the wilderness, you know, they don't stop believing in God. They just start grumbling and complaining and wondering if he actually is a good father to them. Well, that's been Meryn's journey. And she's in a much better place now, which is great to see. But she turned against God. I said, well, of course, you know, the great, good, powerful God can't be the one who's the problem here. It must be me. It must be my faith that isn't strong enough. And so I went through a bit of a ripping myself apart, thinking that you, Sheridan, do not have a strong enough faith. Mm. I mean, for a while there, I thought, well, maybe the word of faith, you know, name it and claim it, preachers have got something right, and maybe I should just, you know, believe that I've got the child and everything. Nothing worked. It never did work. And so I had to really kind of rebuild something different, really, some sort of sense of trust that, you know, I was still okay with God, even though we couldn't see a breakthrough in this area.
You know, I've shared this on the show before. We just got about 2.5 minutes before our hard break, but I got to tell you, rebattling some Lyme disease again for me and seeing this neurologist who's a Christian, and I was feeling physically just so bad, and he was discerning something under the surface, and he said, I just want you to try something. He said, I want you to say, repeat after me, he said, I want you to say, I forgive myself for being sick. And the dam broke. I mean, I looked up at him. I was so surprised that he tapped into something that I didn't even know was there. I couldn't stop crying. And he said, I want you to open your hands and say, I accept me, Lord, and I trust you. And he said,
wow.
You know, he said, holding yourself in contempt will do more damage to your soul and your physical health than you can even imagine, than any disease ever would. But I think anybody who has some kind of physical frailty, ailment, limitation, I think this is a common place to go, and we don't even realize it, you know?
Oh, wow, that's so powerful, Susie. Yeah, I mean, I'll be taking that on. That really is really so powerful. And, you know, it goes back to that first verse that we shared just at the beginning of the show. You know, who am I? I'm a child of God, no matter what. And so I can actually forgive myself if God's kind of embraced me in his family. And I don't even understand what he's doing. But if he still says that I'm a child of God, why rest in that? And I crawl up into his lap, even though I don't understand who he is sometimes or what he's doing. I rest in that relationship.
Well, we've got a little about 40 seconds here before this bottom of the hour break. But did you have to close the door eventually and just say, this is not happening for us? Or how did you process that?
Yeah, we did. There came a time that we just had to draw a line in the sand. I mean, in the end, at the end, 10 years, you know, we tried it all, and we had to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we are moving on from this, just so we could grieve. See, there's no grieving without death, and that's the challenging thing with a broken dream, particularly in this area of infertility, is there is no death, there's no end. You could, quote, keep on going until menopause, you know, but we had to draw a line. That way we could grieve, and from that point on, we could start again.
Wow. Talking to Sheridan Voisey today, title of his book, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. We've got 4 copies. And whatever your broken dream is, when we come back, we're going to talk about the different responses that we can have to our disappointments and our heartbreaks. We'll explore that together. Love to get a copy into your hands. Here's how we're doing it. Not taking calls today. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Resurrection Year in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing. 4 of you get a copy of this great book. It'll be a healing balm for your soul. Can't wait for you to read it. More with Sheridan Voisey when we return. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Honored and blessed to be talking to our friend Sheridan Voisey about his amazing book, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. And if you just tuned in, I really want you to go back and catch the whole podcast once it's up after the live show. Sheridan shared the story of he and his wife going through infertility for 10 years and coming to a place where they had to draw a line in the sand so they could grieve. And I want to talk, Sheridan, a little bit about just whether the broken dream is infertility or kids gone astray, a marriage failing, never getting married, sick but you never get better. What are some different responses to these heartbreaks and disappointments that are actually devastating to our soul?
Yeah, well, I think the one that we have to talk about is what we were touching on just before the break there, is just that self-condemnation. Is that kind of shaking your fist at yourself and saying you're the problem. And, of course, we can do that within to others as well. You know, unfortunately, sometimes within the Christian community, sometimes, we can shoot our wounded when, you know, we walk with somebody for a while who doesn't get better. It can become frustrating. We're frustrated. Why isn't God healing them if we're praying for them? Why aren't they doing more exercise or whatever it might be that we think that they should be doing? And so that can be a difficult thing as well. So it can be condemning ourselves, it can be condemning other people. Certainly, turning our hearts away from God, there is something, on the one hand, I want to say that if you are feeling that way, that I don't want you to deny it. I want you to recognize that that can be a very natural thing to do. I mean, you may well know of the author R.T. Kendall, Susie, mm-hmm. who's written books on forgiveness. I mean, he talks about forgiving God. And you kind of go, hang on a sec, how can we forgive God? He hasn't done anything wrong. But in a sense of God not coming through in the way that we want him to, there can be a place for that, letting God off the hook, so to speak, and letting God be God, because he is all-knowing and all-wise, and even though we can't quite work out why he keeps on saying no to us, he still may well have something very good and special as a plan that's going on with that. So I think there are some of the ways that we can walk this journey in a very dangerous way, in a way that can start to pick away at our souls. But I would also caveat all of that with saying, you know what, give yourself some emotional space to be angry with God, to be angry with yourself. If you try and suppress that, then that can turn into its own kinds of problems. Make sure you walk towards forgiveness, forgiveness of yourself, forgiveness to others, forgiveness of God.
And truly, when you think about forgiveness, it really is for our own soul. So for the person who would rise up and say, God needs no forgiveness, well, he does if you're holding him in contempt. I mean, for your own process and your own journey, you've got to sort that stuff through. You know, it's kind of interesting, too, as you look at Job's story. And, you know, he was a righteous man, and his initial response to utter tragedy was more righteous than most of us. But it's like God knew, of course he knew, that if Job gets pushed far enough, there is a point where Job will pull the card out of his back pocket saying, after all I've done for you. And we all have that limit, I think, of obedience where we shift our weight onto our deeds as if God owes us now. Now that I've done this, you owe this to me. And it's a dangerous place to be because I think it's the very place that enemy can accuse us, tempt us, seduce us. And we can start to become God's accuser. Do you know what I'm saying? Where,
oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things where these refining fires and disappointments, actually, as painful as they are, they do purify, I think, our perspective and our reason for obeying God in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I mean, you know, I've had letters from people who've read Resurrection Year, and I can think of one particular email that I got with somebody who said, we've served God all our lives, and this is how he repays us. Hmm. And there was a sense of, you know, God owes us, you know. He's in debt to us after all that we've given him. And, you know, it's a hard one to reply to because, you know, on the one hand, you know, you empathize with where they're at. But at the same time, each of us, at one point, we had a moment, or I hope we had a moment, where we said to Jesus, I'll go anywhere. I'll do anything.
In response to what you've already done for me, right? I mean, that's in response, not so I can get what I want from you.
Right. I mean, you know, if we've given our life over to him because of him giving his life over to us, then there may well be a time where he says, okay, thank you for giving your life over to me. We're going to walk through some difficult shadows there and valleys there for a little while, but I'm with you and we're going to do something special through this. I mean, I think that's the other thing is, that when we're going through these tough times, there is three prayers that I think we often pray. And this can be any kind of broken dream. Like you said before, it can be infertility. It can be singleness. We hear from a lot of single people who would just long to be married, but Mr. Right or Mrs. Right have not come along. Or the illness, or a lot of career dreams broken. We keep on hearing from people who've lost dream careers, never been able to have them, artists that have never been able to make any money from their art, those kinds of things. And I think there's two prayers that we very typically pray. One is, God, fix this. You know, give us the child, give me the husband, you know, make my art sell on eBay, whatever it might be. The other one is, God, take my desire for it away. Help me be content with being single. You know, or take my desire for a child away. Now, I think that's fine to pray. I'm not too sure God will always answer it because part of those things are very inherent in us just being human. What Marin and I have learned since all of this is that there is a third prayer that we can pray, which is God, take it and redeem it. Use it in a way that only you could do something through this as a result of it happening. A kind of beauty that can only come out of the brokenness. It cannot come out of things being miraculously restored or for things being pure and perfect in the first place. A kind of beauty that can only come through the broken stories. And that's certainly what we've experienced since.
I can't wait to get to the whole idea of how the season of life changed for you. But I got to ask a little bit more about the grief process, because I think some postpone grief going, well, he hasn't for sure said no yet. He's just said not yet. And if I grieve, I'm shutting the door saying this isn't going to happen. And I don't know if I could bear that. But there is a grief to be had. I think if you squish down that disappointment to the point where you're repressing your grief as well, I can't imagine that that's good for your soul. So isn't it also appropriate to say, he may give it to me later, but I have to lay this thing down and surrender it and process what that's done to my soul? There's a place for that kind of grief, isn't there?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's probably the most common question we get is, okay, you and Marin gave up your dream. You know, you left it, you drew a line, you walked past it. When do you know that God said no? You know, has he just said, wait, you know, the time hasn't come, particularly when it comes to children? You know, could the conception happen next month? Could the next round of IVF work? Could the phone call from the adoption agency come any moment? When do you know that God has said no? When do you know it's time to let go of the dream? I wish I had a simple answer. I really do. I've got a blog post, actually, on my blog that explores a few steps you can work through to think that through. But there's no simple answer. Where we got to was the fact that, well, we'd been through this 10 years now, so we'd tried everything. So if you haven't, you know, if you've still got time ahead of you, then continue to walk down the path, explore various options that you think are ethically appropriate for your situation. Keep praying, you know, keep pursuing the goal, keep pursuing the dream. But if you are starting to think that it maybe is time to let the dream go, because, number one, it's either destroying your relationship with God. Number two, it's becoming an idol, which is part of number one, but it's becoming an idol. It's the most important thing to your life now rather than anything else. Number three, it's starting to destroy your relationships, and we keep on hearing about that, people pursuing a dream to the point where it's destroying all of their relationships around them. If those kinds of things are happening as a result of you pursuing your dream and it's time to let that go, that little bit inside you that says, I want to hold on because it may not be time yet, here's some good news for you, which really helped us, is that Jesus is able to resurrect the dead. Hmm. When we were to let go of that dream, we decided we were not going to dig it up again. We were going to draw a line. The dream of having a child was going to be put in a casket, lowered into the ground. We were going to have a funeral. We were going to grieve. We were not going to dig that up. Now, if one day Jesus wants to say to us, actually, I'm going to speak a word and, you know, that dream is going to be resurrected, that's him. That's his prerogative. That will be his work. And so that's the statement of, in the position of faith we've been able to be in. We have put the dream to death, if you like. He can raise the dead if he wants to, but we're not going to go and dig up that grave.
Wow. So talk to us about when you sensed the winds of change blowing, when maybe the warmth of the sun started to touch your face again, when the resurrection year started to happen for you.
A lot of our listeners will probably have memorized and love a proverb called Proverbs 13:12, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And anybody who's gone through a broken dream or is in the midst of one knows just how true that is. The second half of that verse goes, but a dream fulfilled is a tree of life. Marin had only really had one dream, and that was to become a mum. And the challenge for her was, what do I do with the rest of my life now that I can't have that dream fulfilled? I'm different. I've got dreams left, right, and center. So, you know, I've got an alternative if I don't have my dream fulfilled, but Marin didn't. But she did have one, funnily enough. She had always wanted to live and work overseas. And so when that phone call came on Christmas Eve, it was time for Marin to have what we kind of jokingly called the consolation prize, for that to be a kind of a secondary dream to be made fulfilled for her. And so we started thinking through what that might look like, and we were thinking about going to Switzerland because Marin is in medical research and there would have been a lot of job opportunities over there. But then we discovered that the Swiss don't like other people. I say that very jokingly, please, all the lovely Swiss people listening to us. But it is incredibly difficult to get a visa to go into Switzerland unless you're European already. So we couldn't go to Switzerland. And then Marin started looking at jobs in the UK. long story short, she was ultimately offered a job at Oxford University, no less, which is a pretty good gig to get.
Yes.
And so we saw that as God's direction for us to move overseas. You know, leaving overseas to kind of pursue some sort of secondary dream after a broken dream, some people can't do that. In our case, funnily enough, because we couldn't have children, it allowed us to. You know, we were more able to up and pack our bags and move, whereas people with kids don't have quite that same degree of freedom. So it was something that we could do, and we were able to then start again in the UK. Now, that actually brought some problems for me because it meant I had to let go of my own dream, which is a national radio show that we had started. So it was still difficult. Those years were very, very difficult. And when we got to the UK, it was almost as if I was going through another wilderness, whereas Meryn kind of had reached the promised land. She was in a new, wonderful new job. She was starting to really come alive again. And then I had to kind of go through my own secondary grief process, letting go of the radio show and some of the other ministry things that were happening in Australia.
Absolutely amazing, because you were established as a radio host. You were established as an author. Then you go to a whole different world, basically. But you do that for your wife, which I think is absolutely precious. But then God, in due time, through this wilderness, establishes you there, which is just really amazing. When we come back, I want you to talk more about this resurrection year and really the hope and the promise of it for the believer who's walking through the valley of the shadow. I just love the word through. He leads us through the valley, and we don't live there. We don't die there. We're called to go through the valley. Talking to Sheridan Voisey. When we come back, we'll talk more about what the resurrection year looks like. Subtitle of his book, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. I'd love to get a copy in your hands. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put resurrection year in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. Your name goes in a drawing. Four of you will get a copy of this great book. We will be back in a minute. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Sheridan Voisey, radio broadcaster and author, wonderful man of God, and talking about his book today, Resurrection Year, Turning Broken Dreams into New Beginnings. We've got four copies. I'd love to get a copy into your hands. Here's how we're doing it since we're not taking calls today. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Resurrection Year in the subject line. Give me your mailing address, and your name will go in a drawing. And because of the volume of emails we receive, can't really get back to you saying yay, nay, you won, you didn't. But you'll have a book arrive in your mailbox if you win, and that will be a fun surprise. This is what Sheridan writes. He says, the details of our broken dreams may differ, but still they share some commonalities. There's sadness, a sense of unfairness, even jealousy towards those who have what we want. Life feels meaningless. We may battle feelings of failure. We may harbor anger towards God who has denied our requests. But there is life after a dream has died. The God of the crucifixion is also the God of the resurrection. And we're talking now about this resurrection year where you and Meryn moved overseas and she got her, sounds like a dream job, and then you walked through a bit of a wilderness. When did you start to sense that God was putting a new song in your heart, Sheridan?
Yeah. Well, the resurrection year phrase, and isn't it a lovely phrase?
I love it.
I would love to claim it, but it's actually an author, a UK author here called Adrian Plass. I had him on my radio show, and I was talking to him off air after the last interview that we did, and Adrian's the kind of man who, when he asks you, how are you, he actually means it. It's not just a way of, you know, saying hello. And somehow off air, we get talking about the journey that Meryn and I had been on. And he said, well, you know, in the Christian view of things, after a death comes the resurrection. Wouldn't it be wonderful if next year was your resurrection year? Mm. And that's where the phrase came from.
Love
and
it.
I went home, told Meryn that, and she burst into tears. She said, that's exactly what I want. And so that's really how we then came to the UK and we decided that the resurrection year was going to begin the moment we set foot on the plane to come over here to the UK. It wasn't leading up to that. It wasn't, you know, getting the house ready to sell, letting go of the car, packing up all our goods. It was when we sat on that plane. We had a bit of a holiday in Europe before we came over here to the UK, and then the resurrection year began. And so we wanted that to be a year of lower responsibilities. It had to be restful. It had to be fun. There had to be some adventure to it. There had to be beauty. Beauty is one of those things that restores my soul. Mm-hmm. It might be natural beauty, or it might be the beauty that you find in, you know, the best of art in art galleries. For Meryn, it needed to include things like reading books, because she really restores her soul by just having some R&R time like that. It also had to include some renewal. And so on our way over here to the UK, we had some time at a place called Le Brie in Switzerland. Well-known man named Francis Schaeffer, who started that, opened up his home back in the 50s to people who were just asking spiritual questions, and it kind of has continued today in various places around the world, wrestling with some big questions. There's a whole chapter in Resurrection Year where we're wrestling about the whole problem of good and evil in the world, and, you know, in particular, God's goodness and the presence of evil. How can those two things still exist? Kind of, we're wrestling through those kinds of things, and it helped to clear away some of the wood. I think for me, when things started to brighten up, I mean, I would say it was a good 18 months of really, maybe even 2 years of really not knowing who I was or where I was going again. Maybe even more, Susie, if I really am going to be honest and think that through. I think it's probably, we've been here nearly 5 years. I think it's only been the last half a year that I've started to really get a sense as to what now God's calling me to do. And you know what? That's just a little aside. I think that's probably an important thing for us to talk about. Sometimes, yes, you're a child of God, but you still want to know what your next calling in life is, your next role is, your next purpose is. And you know, when you don't know what that is, you know what you do? You just follow the great commandment to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love others as yourself. If you just do that with whatever skills and talents and time you have, you're doing God's will until he opens up what that particular focus and purpose for you is.
I think that was a divine piece of advice, Sheridan, because I think the temptation in the time in between is to grab for yourself, to make something happen. And it seems like whenever we insert our own wisdom into the timing of God, it's always with catastrophic results, if not just results that you have to pay for time and time again. I think it takes great restraint, don't you, to wait on the Lord and do that next thing as he's saying until he reveals what his plan is?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes I think what I've learned over these years is also taking great delight in the deep significance of small things. Because I, like I said before, I tend to dream a lot, dream big and think about this and the next radio program or the book or whatever it might be. You know what, sometimes loving God and loving others is just a series of very important, negligible, small things, deep, significant, but hardly will, you know, move the dial, small things. It's helping somebody with their shopping. It's being around and listening to somebody who needs to be listened to. That stuff is actually powerful. And I think, you know, moving away from the microphone for a bit and, you know, being turned down by British publishers when I came over here and they said, well, who's Sheridan Voysey? We don't know who he is. I know that, you know, he sold some books in Australia, but nobody here knows who Sheridan Voysey is. No, we won't publish his books. As horrible as that season was, it was important because, again, it took me back to that 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. Who am I? I'm a child of God. Is that enough for you, Sheridan? Is that enough? Or will you only ever be content when you're a big-name broadcaster again? And by the way, Susie, I was never a big-name broadcaster. But, you know, well, will you only be content when you've got your name on a book cover? Will you only be content if you're fronting some sort of media project or TV show? If that's the case, then you've still got some personal growth to go.
Boy, good word. We've got just about 2 minutes before we wrap in prayer, Sheridan, but I was love for you to speak to the issue of rest. When you tie that into Resurrection Year, the importance of rest, what that looks like, the purpose of it. Say more about that, if you would.
Yeah, rest is just so important. In fact, let me give four words for people who are going through a broken dream and maybe are just looking for that resurrection year. And by the way, the resurrection year can be 12 months, it can be just a season. But number one would be rest, is that you no doubt have expended so much energy on this dream that you're probably just exhausted and you need some rest. So can you take some holiday time? If you can't do that, can you just maybe reduce the amount of duties that you have or responsibilities that you have just to create some space to rest? Number two would be recreation. The literal meaning of the word recreation is to recreate. So what are those things that restore you and recreate you and fill you up again? Like I was saying before, beauty works for me. Merrin, it's reading books. For you, it might be music. It might be playing sport. It might be taking up a new hobby. It might be writing a book. You know, it might be writing something. So rest, recreation. Thirdly would be renewal. No doubt, this has raised questions for you about God and about your relationship with God and about your faith. A season where you can kind of wrestle through some of those big questions with somebody else. Maybe go to a retreat center. Maybe it's just, you know, reading great books. Maybe you just download every single episode podcast of the Susie Larson Show, you know, and you go through it all. You know, you have some time where you get into a sense of renewal with God so that you can get back into that warm relationship of father-child again. And fourth would be reinvention. That when you can't go through, when you go through a broken dream, you can't become somebody. It affects your identity. Merrin cannot become a mum. That's an identity statement. I was no longer a broadcaster at the time. I'm now doing stuff again, but for the time being, you lose an identity when you go through a broken dream. It's an opportunity for you to become somebody new, and for God to make you somebody new, for him to put you into a place where you can do and be something brand new. And for us, that has meant a completely new role, kind of becoming people of pseudo-healing, really, and people bringing us their broken hearts and dreams. And you know what, Susie, that never happened when I was in broadcasting. It's happened as a result of sharing this story.
Amazing, Sheridan. It's so good. And so good to have you here, and looking forward to our next conversation already. Just really resonate with your heart so much. Wondering if you'd pray for that person listening today, Sheridan, who's right there, who's just, their gut is in knots, their heart is broken, and they're not sure what to make of it all. Would you pray for them?
Yes. Yeah. Father, it astounds me what you accomplished through your son on the cross, and Jesus hanging there, and he is ministering to his mother, saying, Mother, here's your son. Son, here's your mother. Looking after his mother. He is forgiving his enemies. He is redeeming us from our sins. All of that is happening while he's on the cross before the resurrection happens. You are the God who does ministry and uses our brokenness and our cross moments to bring some of the most powerful healing and ministry to other people. So I pray, Lord, for that person who is listening, going through their broken dream. Lord, you know what it is. They've already asked you to fix it or take away the desire for it. But Lord, I ask that you would take that broken dream and transform it into something powerful and new and redemptive and life-giving to others through them, so that they might taste the glory and the joy of being your servant. And I ask this in Jesus' name.
Amen. That's Sheridan Voysey, title of his book, Resurrection Year. God bless you. The podcast will be up in just a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Hope you found some encouragement here. Talk to you next time.